mail call.
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees. You can ask us whatever you want to ask us. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. BH on Twitch, EJ Warner didn't bring the greatest show on turf on Saturday. Go Cougs. Yeah, EJ Warner is the son of Kurt Warner. He's the son of Temple. Right. He looks like he's 13 years old. He's like 5'5".
Is he a freshman?
Yeah, true freshman. He looks, I mean, he's got an arm. There's no doubt he's got an arm. Cougars won that game.
Height might be a problem. How about his hand size? Did you shake hands with him?
I did not shake his hand. No, height, I mean, he's not an NFL prospect at all. I mean, he is
and won't be?
Short. No.
There's a reason why he's at Temple, right?
No, he's not going to be an NFL. I mean, I would be stunned. I would be absolutely stunned. 713-780-ESPN or on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. Dr. Dre, I hope he's willing to do so. Talking about Crane spending money. My contention is if Click didn't want... I don't understand what you're asking. Is if Click didn't do what Crane asked him to do, why did it take so long to fire him? I believe, and this is my theory, and maybe I'm crazy, my theory is that they want David Stearns. David Stearns isn't going to be available until next offseason. So they were willing to have Click back on a one-year deal, knowing that it wouldn't cost them David Stearns. And I also think it's the reason why they went with this little like GM by committee parliament thing and aren't going to hire a real GM, because ultimately they want David Stearns in 12 months.
You had me believing when you said Sig Meidel, and then when the Brewers and Stearns reached a crossroads but had a year left. He was their president. He wanted to walk away. They wouldn't let him. They tried to say it was personal things going on outside of baseball. But then when they found out he was a hot commodity, said, but you're not going anywhere else for a year. I think you're absolutely onto something. But I think also along the way, the one thing we could say about owners, and as much as we've broken down Jim Crane, is they don't like to give away free money. See Tillman Fertitta. They also don't want a guy walking away midseason or when you need him most and you know there's not anybody available that could just plug and play for what he's doing for you. And just say, hey, you walk with your salary. I'll pay someone else in the short term and someone coming up in the long term. They don't like that too much. I think that factored in as well.
713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. E-Rock's got a question for the Killer Bees. What's up, E-Rock?
Hey, man, I want to know, what quarterback do you think will be picked in the draft for the Texans rebuild? Because I know they got the rebuild, but they can't do it with me.
Appreciate the question, Eron.
Well, we know where I stand because I've had this stance for well over a year now, but Bryce Young has been my guy. Bryce Young has done nothing for me to say that he won't be my guy. You bring up the pushback on that, Jeremy, and the fact that he doesn't fit the Nick Caserio mold, per se, in terms of what Caserio, from a size-wise and measurables. But, boy, I'll tell you what, the intangibles of pocket presence, intelligence at the position, the ability to step up big when the moment arises, I think that Bryce Young would be a perfect fit for the Houston Texans.
I love the way that E-Rock phrased it, because he said, who do you think the Texans will draft if they go quarterback number one? I want it to be Bryce Young. I want Bryce Young to be the QB here. If Bryce Young was 4 inches taller, Bryce Young would be one of the greatest college football quarterback prospects in the same class of Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, John Elway.
But Trevor because Lawrence, he's not, who got that, he hasn't proved it in the NFL, right, but he got that love coming out.
If the height is the only reason that we're not, you know, talking about Bryce Young as the complete package, I don't want to miss out on a guy because I thought he was too short. I think you can play the quarterback position nowadays in the NFL at that size. Kyler Murray, look, I understand that Kyler Murray has his issues, but Kyler Murray is capable of being a good NFL quarterback. Drew Brees did it as well. I like Bryce Young the most. I really don't think Caserio is going to draft a quarterback the size of Bryce Young. I think they would go Stroud over anybody else. Stroud has, you know, all of the, you know, accolades. He's got the size that Young doesn't have. I think that they would leave Stroud over Young. I even think they might go Will Levis over Bryce Young just because of the size. 713-780-ESPN, Killer B, Mailbag Monday. Brandon T says, what about bringing up Pedro Leon? I don't want Pedro. I don't like the idea of minor leaguers unless they're just like, you know, you have to play them. You know that they're knocking on the door. Pedro Leon is not banging the door down yet. He's still very toolsy. His numbers aren't quite what you want them to be if you're ready to like try to insert a minor leaguer into the starting lineup. I like Pedro Leon being like a plan B, plan C going into next season. And if injuries happen, then he gets his opportunity. I don't want him to be plan A at any single position next year.
No, and I think, and again, kind of like we were talking about with Johnny Diaz, is the fact that you're not the Marlins or the A's or the Rays. ways, and you're not trying to groom talent and get them better on the fly while maybe hindering your baseball team in the short term. You're trying to win for now while grooming players for later. And I think right now you can leave him where he is and keep continuing to groom him while getting true major league talent that can plug and play right away for a team that's trying to win another World Series.
713-780-ESPN, our Mailbag Monday. Lamont with Thanksgiving a week from Thursday. Baked, smoked, or fried turkey?
I'm not a big fried turkey guy. And it just, I know some people love it. I would go baked first, smoked second, fried third.
Man, you might have done reverse order for me. I think I would go fried, smoked, and then baked. Now, you can mess up a fried turkey. You got to do it right. Yep. But doing a fried turkey
right.
You can
mess up your face and other body parts, too, if you don't do it right.
Watch the news on Thanksgiving.
And the videos, yeah.
A good fried turkey is fantastic. I love smoked pretty much anything. Like, smoked turkey is really good, too. I love Thanksgiving.
I
feast on Thanksgiving. I stuff my face. I get very fat. Give me some turkey. And I only like it once a year.
Me, too.
Give me some turkey, mashed potatoes, a little cranberry sauce.
Oh, macaroni and cheese.
In heaven. Oh,
some
yeah.
gravy and all stuffing.
Of it. All
oh, yeah.
of it.
See,
all
my wife, the vegan, says, so, babe, are you to the point now where you don't want turkey on Thanksgiving? I go, no, one time a year, I'm sorry. I look forward to it. I go for multiple plates of it. I don't care what I feel like afterwards because I enjoy eating it, and I want the turkey. Sorry.
You guys know what we're close to getting to, right?
Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That time of year when I got to tell you, turkey's not good.
Oh. Jeez. I mean, I'm okay with that 364 days a year, but on Thanksgiving, turkey is fantastic.
Doesn't matter how you make it.
Brendan likes liver. He likes. He's just the anti-eat.
Man.
The dessert takes are one thing, but turkey's not. Come on now.
E on Twitch says we're doing gumbo and frying shrimp. F turkey and all the traditional BS.
Jeez.
That's the first time I've ever agreed with E. That sounds great. I love gumbo. I love fried fish.
But you would replace your turkey with it? See, that's the difference.
I think I'd want it for like my alternative, like my secondary. Like, you know how you have like your immediate family that you have Thanksgiving with on Thanksgiving. Then you have like your distant relatives who you might have Thanksgiving with like the weekend before or like the weekend after. It's perfect for that.
Or you might have the neighbors and everybody over a couple times. You could have a precursor to another meal or... I'm fine with especially the shrimp part of it, but man, no, it's not replacing the turkey. Sorry.
No, the secondary Thanksgiving. I think that's the way we can go with that one. 713-780-3776, Mailbag Monday, 4488. Is the Cougar men's basketball team a legitimate Final Four team?
I think absolutely yes. I think that, you know, what you've seen early on is they got a 5-star, and you and I keep talking about him because I keep watching the games going, this kid is a grown-ass man that's coming out of high school and contributing immediately to a Kelvin Sampson team that is going to harp on defense and make sure he plays that end of the court, but is offensively gifted along with Sasser and all the other guys that they have to play the offensive end of the court. They can match up with just about anybody in the country this year, and I think that they can give a lot of people problems with their matchups. I think they're legit a Final Four team.
Look, I'm a homer, being the radio guy for the Cougars basketball team, but I think any time that a Sampson is the head coach, especially recently, that they're capable of reaching a Final Four. Did it a couple of years ago. They were a game away from doing it last year. Many would say that maybe they should have won that game against Villanova. I would say that that was probably an accurate thing to say. So, yeah, they're a legit Final Four team. Somebody's asking how to listen to them. I would suggest the Varsity Network. 713-780-ESPN, our mailbag. Bag Monday. 8029. What about Myers and left with Chaz in center?
Nope. No, thank you.
One, Jake is the better center fielder.
I feel like I just saw an attic full of mannequins in my new house. Nope. No, thank you.
Jake's the better center fielder. So if they were both going to be in the outfield at the same time, Chaz would be the one playing left, Jake Myers would be the one playing center field. There's not enough offense there. Like, you need a better bat in your corner outfield than either Chaz McCormick or Jake Myers.
And you know, I always say it's funny how things sort themselves out. Dusty was evidently not a Chaz guy right away, just overall, according to Chandler Rome.
Yeah.
And Jake was the center fielder of the future. Click's gone, and in the playoffs, Dusty putting Chaz in center field turned out real good for both Dusty and for the fan base and for the team. I think Chaz has solidified his position in center field, and Jake, we'll see where he fits in.
Yeah, I am curious to see the future of Jake Myers now that we know what we know, and that's we know that Click was the biggest
to the new
advocate.
GM.
I still think Jake Myers is a
major piece.
I think he's a starting center fielder in the league. I think that he is.
I think he can be. I think the bigger thing is it's not what the tools he brought to the table when he first came up. It's about getting over what he's had to endure since he came up.
And I don't think it's a guarantee at that point. I mean, torn labrum, serious. The mental aspect of what he went through after he came back, too, and failing twice.
I was just going to say, the mental aspect that everybody always, you know, attributes it to when you get hit by a pitch.
Yeah.
It's so much more than that. It's his apprehension chasing balls at the wall in the warning track, diving for balls in his shoulders and always, yeah, there's certain things guys just can't get over mentally, and that's a big obstacle.
Now, if you go into spring training with Myers and Chaz fighting for the center field position, I'm okay with that.
I like the competition,
too. As long as you get a left field DH and as long as you get a first baseman. I need two starting bats for the Astros this offseason. 713-780-3776, Killer B, Mailbag Monday. Do you see the Texans drafting two quarterbacks in the draft and having a competition, maybe early round / late round picks?
Read that one, the first part.
Do you see the Texans drafting two quarterbacks in this draft and having a competition?
No way. Nope. Because there's too many other holes to fill and too many are, you did it, you know, kind of tongue in cheek on Twitter. But you know what? There's too many good players and too many different positions that you could be had because you're going to be picking so high in every round.
Yeah.
You can't afford to take two quarterbacks and waste getting an extra good player on your roster.
The holes makes it difficult. Like, if you didn't have as many holes, I don't hate the idea because you kind of get like a Robert Griffin III, Kirk Cousins situation. Now, if you draft one number one, like, that's your dude. I wouldn't hate if you love a quarterback in the mid rounds that slides to like the fifth round. I think top four rounds, if you draft a quarterback as high as number one or even the Browns pick, that you can't draft another quarterback in the top four rounds. But if you want to go quarterback in the fifth round, knowing that, hey, this is a project, he's never really going to be our franchise quarterback, but we think that someday he could like get us a third round draft pick, I'd be okay with that from like a best available mindset. But anything top four, if you're drafting a quarterback at number one, I'm out on that. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 8240, do you think Myers would have made the catch Chaz made in the World Series?
No. Not this version of Jake
he's
Myers.
Got, I think you're right. I know where you're going.
Yeah, what we just talked about. If this was Jake pre-injuries, when he first came up, yes, I think he was capable of making that catch.
Yeah.
The Jake we saw coming back and trying to fit back in at the plate's one thing. But the tentative way he played center field, I don't think so.
Yeah. He's got more range than Chaz. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he gives his life diving into the wall like that. In fact, I would lean to think that he doesn't give his life diving into the wall like that. He can be a little soft sometimes, a little hesitant sometimes. Sorry, Mrs. Myers. 713-780-ESPN. You can always ask us questions on the HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. We thought that Embrace the Suck was done after this season, right? We thought that this was the final year for the Texans to embrace the suck. I think the Texans got one more year of it. They've played so poorly. Another year of Embrace the Suck is in our future. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at MyBookie. If you're looking for a place to put money down on the Monday night game tonight, it's only one place to go, MyBookie.ag. Reason why is they take care of you every single step of the way. It's not just putting your money down, hoping your team wins by the appropriate number and moving on to the next game. They take care of you in a multitude of ways. They're doing it again right now, and it's the right time to get in and capitalize because they always take care of you when you get in and you start putting your money into your account. Well, this is another way to do it. Remember this code, BET975. Whenever they ask you for it and you give them that, you have a chance to add extra money to your account because when you sign up and use that promo code BET975, your first deposit is matched halfway up to $1,000. Put $1,000 in, get an extra $500 in your account. More money in your account, more games you can bet on, more chances to win. You get the idea. And they take care of you in other ways, too. And with the baseball done, but the college basketball coming on and all the other games you can bet on, they have all the sports and all the games and live in-game betting, too. So they will take care of every single way that you want to get involved. It's just other opportunities for you to cash in. They have a lot of stuff going on, including the money bag right now. The MyBookie money bag, a one-of-a-kind opportunity for a spin for crazy odds on prop bets and future bets. Place your bet, spin the wheel, get ready to score epic odds on the best teams, athletes, and events. And if you win, you could win big. Turn picks into winners at MyBookie.ag. It's not just a sports book, it's a community. Remember that promo code, BET975, and bet anything, anytime, anywhere. Only place I tell you to do it, mybookie.ag.
ModeloSportsCantina.com.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right. I think that... I don't want to say this. I know that our Twitchers hate this. Twitch.tv/ESPN 97.5. I know that I know Paul hates it, who you you worked with last week, who I'm sure did a fabulous job. Granato used to hate it, but he sees the light now. He understands that you should always listen to the Killer Bees. I think half of our audience doesn't like this either. Embrace the suck. I mean, that's where the Texans are currently. A one-win team. I'm excited for April 27th. The most exciting thing for me the rest of the year from a Houston Texans perspective about the NFL season is the April 27th first round of the NFL draft when the Texans, hopefully, if they do their job, will be picking number one, and we'll see what happens with the Cleveland Browns. A pick that will probably be, I think, a little bit outside of the top 10, but maybe in the teens, right? I think that that's probably where it'll land. That's what I'm most looking forward to in the Houston Texans season. There was once upon a time, maybe, I don't know, 4 or 6 weeks ago, where I thought that the Texans put together a good draft class next year, spend this money that you have, although people overrate that a little bit because the money that they have, there's not a whole lot of players under contract, so you start looking like the numbers a little bit. They can't really afford huge contracts. They just have to sign a bunch of guys to fill the team. I don't feel like the Texans are anywhere close to playing competitive football even next year. Even if they have a good draft, even if they go Bryce Young and Bryce Young is as advertised, even if they hit the Cleveland Brown draft pick, this team has so many holes. I cannot envision a scenario that exists where the Houston Texans would be playing significant football in December of 2023.
See, I can't go that far. And I've been the catalyst, orchestrator, creator, whatever you want, author of Embrace the Suck. And I'm glad that everybody's finally jumping on it and everybody takes a different amount of time to see the light. But I also said that I thought it was only needed for a two-year period of time. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to make the playoffs next year, but I think you're going to be a more competitive football team. You don't have to suck again because you can see the young players developing. You can see 2 years of draft picks. You know, not every free agent signing is going to turn out like Jerry Hughes or turn out like the corner?
Stevie Nelson.
Stevie Nelson. But you're going to hit, you know, more solid veterans that are younger, more left in the tank, guys that can contribute and help. And you already have a running back. You have one of those positions that is very key and important, checked off the list. You know, you're still evaluating what you have and what you're going to do with receivers, including a veteran, disgruntled, overpaid wide receiver. But because you already added a guard, you know that you have two tackles. One's going to be on a veteran that's going to be at left tackle, and you have your choice to do it at right tackle. You can add more offensive linemen. You can add where you need. You can also then dabble into free agency for even more. And I think now that over-under in Vegas goes a little higher, and you see more progress, and you see a team that stays competitive longer. So it's part of the process and the progression. It doesn't go from embrace the suck playoffs, but it can go embrace the suck. Oh, I see what they're doing here. The guys are developing, and they're getting closer. So I don't think you embrace the suck next year. How about you embrace the mediocrity?
Look, I'm not saying that the Texans shouldn't build a roster with the idea of trying to win. I'm not suggesting that the rookies are bad or like need to be bad for like another year of let's get the best absolute draft picks. This is more of I feel the Texans are further away than I thought. The way that they've played the last month of the season, I feel that they're further away than I thought. I don't feel like even a really good draft class and a really good free agency class has this team playing anywhere near 500 football next year. So, like, who cares about the number one, number two, number three pick in the 2024 NFL draft? This is more of I feel the Texans are a lot further away than I felt a month ago. You had people in this city that thought they might be in playoff contention this year, that the upside was like 7 wins. And if the upside's 7 wins, depending on when you get those 7 wins, you'd be in the playoff hunt with 7 wins in a 7-team make the playoff from each conference where 9 wins get you either at or near the postseason. It did with the Eagles last year who went 9-8. I don't envision a scenario where even next year the Texans are going to be capable of winning 7 games. Because what is that path? What is that avenue? Because even if they are drafting a franchise quarterback, we talked about it earlier with the rookies. Like, you can't win with rookies as your best players. Now, if they're not your best players, you can win with guys like that. But we saw the mistakes that Jalen Petrie made yesterday and has been making for the last few weeks, and I still think he's going to be a very good player. I still have high hopes on Kenyon Green, who I don't think has been playing very good football for the last 2 or 3 weeks. It is difficult to win in the NFL with rookies as your best players. That's not going to change next year. Will it be a more talented team? Absolutely. Will it be a more fun team to watch? Absolutely. Especially if they go quarterback in the first round. Do I think it's within the realm of possibility they win 7 games? Nope, absolutely not.
So I think you can go from embrace the suck to embrace the development.
That's fine. The phrasing is fine. I don't care about the phrasing. I just don't feel like they're close.
I think they're closer, right? I think you will see the progress. Like you said, when you know instead of searching for a franchise quarterback, you drafted one. Now, you don't know if he's going to pan out or not, but taking him where you take him and what your expectations are, you can watch his development thinking he's going to be the guy. And then the other guys that you take are going to develop along with him. You're absolutely right. That's why I said they're not going to make the playoffs in one false swoop from embracing the suck. But you're going to see advancement in terms of not just wins and losses, which we know we're not supposed to grade the team by, but by the depth, by the overall talent on the roster, by the younger guys that we were just talking about from this year's draft class taking that first step up, by the draft picks that you just take, including the picks from Cleveland, and seeing them fit in to the mix of young, talented players that are going to develop. And it's much like the Rockets scenario. You don't have to embrace the suck when you already have 7, 8, 9 guys
right.
that are all the same age with the same talent, you know, ability to possibly have the talent to blossom. Texans with a bigger roster have more holes to fill, but I think you'll see development. I think you're right. Taking a jump from like 4 at max and going to 9 is way too unrealistic.
Right. And look, I think in the NFL at times you will see that. I think at times in the NFL you'll see a team that goes from 3 wins to 8 wins. Then you'll see them go backwards for 6, and then they win 10.
That's why they say like mediocrity is the worst place to be in the NFL. You're either really good or really bad. So they might have to endure being kind of in the middle for a year or two as they make the progression.
I think the Texans will be better next year. Like they have to be, right? They have 2 first-round draft picks. How can they not be better next year than they are this year? And even if it doesn't translate in the wins, which I think it will, because this Texans team this year might only win 2 or 3 games. They're going to win more than 2 or 3 games next year. But the idea that they could be close next year to like this playoff contention, I just don't see it. There's so many holes.
I think the over-under from year to year is like 2, 2.5 on the medium side, the fair side, and 3 on the high side. So if you're projected by Vegas to have 4 wins 1 year, I think if you can get to 6 and 6.5 to 7, you maybe fluke one out or get one that you didn't see coming, that you can see the progress. You're still progressing, right? And then the next year, another 2.5 to 3. Suddenly you're at 9, 10, and you're playoff, wild card-ish, and then you keep going from there.
Yeah, see, poor Marine saying, ha-ha-ha-ha, better? If you had the number one pick in the NFL draft and a top 15 first-round draft pick as well, yes, you're going to be better than the current edition of the Houston Texans.
I mostly agree with what Jeremy's saying, that the team feels farther than maybe we realized at the start of the season. I do have one important question for you. Is it fair next year, even if we feel like they're going to be, you know, maybe not as far along as we thought, to start judging them on wins?
Starting next year?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's fair within reason. Like, you shouldn't be looking at next year's like, oh, they should be winning 9 games, anything like that. Well, should you see a win improvement from this year? Yes, absolutely. And I think that you can start, like, I think Lovie Smith needs to start being assessed as soon. Look, I think he should be assessed right now, but especially as soon as next year. And I think you need to start assessing Nick Caserio if you're Cal McNair as well.
I think that what I can get behind is the Texans need to be I will be mentally with the Texans next year where I am with the Lions this year. I can live with the struggle early on in the first half of the season. You're going to be relying on a bunch of young dudes at the start of their career. Mm-hmm. But by the back half of the season, they have to be looking like at least a five, six, seven win team for me to be feeling better about the direction they're heading.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at it. I think wins start coming into play.
Then I can
next
live with
season.
Everything you're saying.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line and get. Why'd you look at me like that?
I didn't look at you like that. I looked at Joel.
Oh, let's go out to Troy. Get Troy in here. Troy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Troy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey. With a first-round draft quarterback, we get a fresh OC to help him out, or what happens there? I'll hang up and listen.
Troy, before you hang up and listen, you better stop cheating on us with other shows and be back to be the loyal guy you always were. Just letting you know, you've been put on notice.
Let's answer that on the other side. With a franchise quarterback, do you have to have that conversation? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, you're not trying to win an Olympic medal at this point in time in your life. You're trying to win the day. Winning the day means, hey, I got all my to-do list done. I took care of everything I needed to do for work. I was able to spend some time with my family and my kids and be energetic when I was around them. Got to the gym, maybe got a workout in. Maybe you're struggling with that on a daily basis and you need some help. Apollo Men's Health can help. For both men and women, it can be as simple as a B12 shot, taken all the way to the levels of all the different hormone therapy options they offer for you. If you're in the gym already and you don't think you're getting the results that you really want to see out of working out again, do a full body composition analysis, then monitor your progress every few weeks. You'll find out that if your body fat is down, your muscle mass is up, and other numbers look good, you might not see it in the weights you're lifting, but you will see it in the numbers that you're getting from the full body comp. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. Stuff for your smoothies, fat burners, and other things to go with your vitamins daily. They have those things too. The main thing is they care and they want to help. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. Find out all the services they offer. If something or a couple of things seem like they could help you, make an appointment. You'll find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. More important than that, they care about their patients. So if you tell them what's going on and tell them where you want to get to, they'll put you on a plan that works and they're going to get you results. They do it for me. They do it for Patrick Creighton. They do it for so many people in this town. And you could be the next in line to get help from the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Just check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. And that body comp or that B12 shot, free on your first official visit, just to get you off on the right foot. They're good people taking care of good people on a daily basis. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Turn down for what?
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Talking about the Texans and their, look, they've been embracing the suck, right? They don't have a roster capable of winning. They're going to try, obviously, to build their roster next year. They're going to have two first-rounders. They have a decent amount of draft capital. They have a decent amount of cash to spend, but they don't have a lot of players under contract. So I don't expect the Texans to be making splash free agent signings because they can't. They can't be signing multiple players to huge deals because they have to sign a team. They have to put a team together.
Well, you're right. They have to fill out a full roster, so they're going to be more clickish than cranish, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, yeah.
That's the easiest way I can sum it up and kind of bring it all together from what we've been talking about this during the course of the show. You're going to still be in the category of having to be somewhat frugal and conservative with the way you spend your money. But you're going to be looking more optimistically at young players that might have been placed in the wrong situation from the time they were drafted and they didn't really fit in that first situation. But that doesn't mean that they don't have talent and that coming out, you didn't think that they were worthy of where they were picked just with the wrong team. And you give them a second chance, they flourish, they become the kind of player you need them to be, but they always felt they could be. And it's a win-win. It's not going to be as much of the Jerry Hugheses and the guys on the downside that are just trying to survive and find one more contract. It's guys that are going to prove everybody, hey, this one opportunity doesn't define who I am as a football player. I'm still pretty good, and I've got a lot of gas left in the tank.
Yeah, I think that Kasaria's been weird signing free agents because I think he's done a decent job of signing free agents, like if you had a winning team. Like if you had a team that was a playoff team and you add a Jerry Hughes, that's a really nice, cheap free agent acquisition. But he's not really helping the Texans because the Texans are depleted of talent all throughout. I think that there's been other moves, like Stevie Nelson, I think has been a good free agent acquisition for the Houston Texans, especially if you had a competitive team. Now he fills out your cornerback position. You know, maybe he's your number two, or maybe he's even like a number three, number four corner for depth purposes. But on a one-win team, when you have a lack of talent, you don't notice it as much. It's not as big a deal. AJ Cann, who I think that, you know, is kind of average as a right guard in the NFL. If you had a winning team, it's a free agent move that looks all right. But like for a team like this, you're basically just putting together a 53-man roster.
Yeah, I mean, at this time, if you had like a Casario type running the Rockets and you knew you already had guys that could be your franchise players, you knew you had guys that could fill out, you know, the starting five and a couple of role players. Now you're looking for that seasoning, that veteran here, that shooter there, that specific, maybe not five talents in one guy, but one really good talent in a guy that kind of adds a J.J. Redick feel to a team that already has go-to players on the wing. That's where Casario would be best, I agree with you, but he's not there yet. Nope. So now the challenge is, how do I still take the picks necessary to kind of build that core together that's going to win long-term, with using free agency as a way to speed the process up, not as big as people would like baby steps, not, you know, long strides in a sprint, but trying to get, again, a little younger for a little bit more money and a little longer term, that's going to be around a little longer that can help you more from play to play instead of just, hey, this is a guy that's going to come on the cheap, that's been a good locker room guy that might have a little left in the tank.
Yeah. See, I think this offseason for the Texans, it needs to be more about what you're saying, where you find a, you know, a 27-year-old free agent that is a backup somewhere else that's looking for a starting job, and you can get him for 3-4 years, and maybe he's part of a foundation that at some point you hope can get you back into playoff contention. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Troy asked us the question about if you draft that franchise quarterback, what do you need to do at that offensive coordinator position? I think it's a fair question. I'm not sure that I want Pep Hamilton to be leading the offense for a franchise quarterback on this team. I think Davis Mills has gone backwards this year. And it's not a think. He has gone backwards this year. And the only real difference is Pep Hamilton's his offensive coordinator, whereas he had Tim Kelly before. I've seen like the Mills Mafia talk about, well, his offensive line was better last year. No, it wasn't. His offensive line's much better this year, and he's actually got a running game this year with Damian Pierce. His receivers are the same, where I think Brandon Cooks is having a worse year this year than last year, but I think that the gap there has been replaced by Nico Collins, who's having a better year this year than he was last year. I think it's a wash.
It is. It's a wash completely. That's what I was going to say. You can just you call it a push across the board because you didn't have a running game a year ago. Now you do. You know what? The offensive line was better. Maybe the receivers were better because Cooks was more focused and bought in a year ago. But overall, you can go back and forth, this, that, and the other thing, and say all you want to say. But no, regardless of who's around you, if the cream rises to the top, then your quarterback, another year into the league with all the offseason work and all the, you know, knowing the playbook better and doing all the things that he was, you know, does in his progressions, you could see signs that he's not staring down receivers, that he's not understanding that there are progressions, and if they're not there, to eat it, to dump it, to get down so that you don't lose a bunch of yards on it, and things like that. The internal clock that just still hasn't changed. It's going way too fast. The fourth quarters, there's the turnovers. There's all kinds of things to point to that go, you could see it getting better with guys that are good quarterbacks.
Yeah, and with, like, if you're investing the number one draft pick in any of these guys, whether it's Bryce Young, whether it's C.J. Stroud, I think a lot of people would be mad if it was Will Levis. I honestly think that. Like, if they drafted Will Levis number one over Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, the city might riot. They really would. I think it's probably like 60% would want Young, 40% would want Stroud. I think 0% want Levis. And if Levis is the guy at number one, I think that they would demand Nick Caserio get fired. I think that they would riot in this city. But for any of those guys, I want an offensive mind helping them along the way. I don't, like you mentioned, the Trevor Lawrence situation where last year he was within this toxic environment with Urban Meyer and it was a terrible place to be, and now you have Doug Peterson that's basically trying to recondition who Trevor Lawrence is as a quarterback. You need that guy from day one. Mm-hmm. If you're going to invest the number one pick in any quarterback and you expect that quarterback to be the one that leads you back to the NFL promised land of postseason football, you need to have that coach ready to work with him from day one, not a year down the road, not 2 years down the road. It has to be immediately.
Yeah, because it can actually set you back a year or two instead of the progression that you want to see when you throw the quarterback into the fire and realize, hey, he's going to make mistakes in year one. He's going to take some lumps, but it's going to be worth it because he's learning along the way to be better year in, year out. Well, you can't get better if every year you're learning a new playbook or you're getting the crap beat out of you and, you know, and no one's there to kind of guide you through, or the guy that was is let go so that another guy starts a new relationship the next year. You look at all the guys, whether they were good or not once they made it to the NFL, and Sam Darnold is one of the easiest examples, but Baker Mayfield and other guys had to deal with guys that weren't ready for the position yet, that were basically, he was told to follow their lead. And if that lead is bad and they lead you down the wrong path, it can be a career killer, not just a year killer. Mm-hmm. And that's what you have to be hyper aware of when you truly use the draft capital that's high, that valuable, to take a first-round pick and spend it on a quarterback.
Because what do you hear all the time, too, whenever you draft the franchise quarterback, that you need to protect the investment with an offensive line, that you need to give him the skill position players to shine, a running game to take away some attention for the passing game. Why is the OC any different? It shouldn't be. It's all part of the equation. It's a variable in this complicated equation of trying to build an NFL quarterback. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Bo, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. What's going on, Bo?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I'm just curious. I don't know how you rank your quarterbacks that are coming into the draft this year, But if Houston does end up with the first overall pick, would it be willing to trade that pick to somebody like Seattle who has two first-round picks and get maybe the second or third option quarterback so you got more first-round picks this year?
Yeah, appreciate the call, Bo. Brendan hates whenever we talk trading down in the NFL draft. That's always on the table. Like, you should always try to get as good a value as you can. But if you feel like one of these three quarterbacks is a franchise changer, that he is going to get this team back to the postseason, if you believe that he can be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL someday, maybe even top five, you can't pass up on that.
I wanted to clarify, I hated talking about trading down last year because there was nobody people wanted to trade up for.
Mm-hmm.
The discussion was nobody liked the quarterback.
Okay.
If we approach the draft this year and the Texans have the number one pick, I think that there absolutely are going to be teams interested in trading up.
Oh, they're going to be interested in trading up, but you got to be real frugal to Jeremy's point about if, because we talked about it, you're not just in the NFC watching a bunch of older guys realizing the door's wide open for you to slide in and take advantage.
Oh, I wouldn't do it.
You're in a quarterback-heavy AFC with Herbert and with Mahomes and with Allen and other guys on the way up that you realize it can't be just franchise quarterback top 15-ish. It has to be top 10 and better. So if you focus and know that there's one guy that you got to have, and you should be able to determine that before the draft gets close, to where you know of the three or four guys that are going to be first-round picks, there is one guy we love. There are other guys we feel like can play the position. It's totally different than a linebacker or an O-lineman where you go, if I get this guy, great. If not, this guy can do the same thing. The talent is there at that position group. The quarterback's so hyper-important and so much more magnified that you have to focus in on your guy and know if you have the top pick in the draft, it would take a mountain to be able to get you to trade for when you could get your guy.
This depends on your scout. Like, if you're in love with Bryce Young, Will Levis, CJ Stroud, whatever, if you're in love with any of those three guys and you think they're going to lead you to the promised land, you pick them. You have to pick them. If you don't believe in those three guys and somebody's banging down your door with this Herschel Walker type of trade, and it didn't even need to be a Herschel Walker type of trade. If you don't like those three quarterbacks and you get a really good offer, you got to do it. But it depends on your scout of those QBs. Me personally, I'm putting all my chips in the center of the table for Bryce Young. Sorry.
I am too. And I've been that way, and I've been consistently on that train the entire time. The other thing you have to kind of factor in is how many times you think you're going to have this number one overall pick, where you're sitting in the driver's seat of every single round. And if you don't think that you're going to be there next year, and you don't know what the crop of quarter, and even if you do know the crop of quarterbacks, maybe there's a guy you really love coming out next year, but you don't think you're going to be in the position and don't expect to be in the position to have the number one overall pick in each of the rounds that you're drafting in, well, then you've got to try and figure out, and that's where it gets to be really a science, who might be in that number one pick that you might be able to trade with, and I don't think it's going to match up.
That's where it's complicated, but it depends on how much you love that quarterback. If you love him, you pick him, you select him, and you move on trying to build around him. If you don't, then you try to get the best offer to trade down. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Are the Texans in a league of their own at the bottom of the NFL? We'll ask a Wilhouseman. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees hanging out with Cody Stooch. You can listen to him every day, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7. Most Monday through Friday, 3 to 7, unless Texas A&M's playing basketball, which we get a day this week, don't we, Brendan? Don't we get an Aggie basketball break?
I think we get a half hour.
No, that's nothing.
Maybe more depending on what happens on Thursday.
We need the Aggies to win or lose Thursday to... Either way, Friday, it's going to impact our show.
Right, but one of them is like the full show. I don't remember which is which.
Yeah, so are we rooting for the Aggies basketball on Friday?
I'll let you know before Thursday.
Well, okay. BK already knows. Just catch him in the hallway. He'll tell you exactly the scenario that needs to play out so that he works less.
Buzz Williams and Jack Easterby, BFFs, by the way.
Jack Easterby's probably the volunteer chaplain for A&M basketball.
Don't have to worry about Aggie bowl games this year, which Connor, was it Wigman or Weigman? I can never remember.
Wigman.
They shouldn't play them in one of the next two games.
Redshirt them?
Absolutely. Why would you lose a year for a team that's not going to a bowl game? And I know that the counter argument is always, well, he's going to be drafted early or he's going to transfer before the eligibility. Keep the options alive, man. Options are the key to life. Texans lost yesterday. They lost a football game. They've only won one now in 9 tries. They're 1-7-1. Currently would have the top pick in the NFL draft, Cody. Are the Texans in a league of their own when it comes to the bottom of the NFL?
They're not, because there's still one team hot on their heels and arguably is a bigger disaster than where the Texans are. And actually, it's not even arguable. The Raiders are a bigger disaster than the Houston Texans.
Who saw that
right
coming,
now,
by the way?
Nobody.
As much as we say, look, and I said, I'm the first to admit, I thought the Giants in Seattle would be near the bottom of the NFL this year, and I was wrong. Mm-hmm. But I also thought that the Raiders going out and making the huge commitment to Devontae Adams to get even more resources to a guy in Carr that kept, like, call him super glue, call him whatever you want. He kept the wheels on and got a team to the playoffs that had more distractions and more issues from locker room to on the field to off the field and found a way to win. Like, you're putting, and you went out on the defensive side too, and you added Jones. You added all over the place to where you should be taking the next step towards deep playoff runs, not taking two steps back and looking as bad as they've looked.
And they had a chance to beat the Bengals in the playoffs last year too. Mm-hmm. And then they go and change not just the head coach, they change the entire organization. They bring in some Patriot Way guys, both Patriot guys, the GM and the head coach spot. And McDaniels has just turned that thing into an absolute disaster. What a joke they are. They were in the playoffs last year. They added talent this offseason, including, you mentioned, Jones, Devontae Adams on the offense. And now they're right there nipping at the Texans' heels for the worst record in all of football. That's a total disaster. And McDaniels should be in consideration to be a one-and-done guy. Tuck his tail, go right back to New England.
I'd fire him. I would. If I'm a Davis, I'd fire. I mean, I know all I need to know about Josh McDaniels as an NFL head coach.
It's a tough pill to swallow because of the money you got to eat. But obviously, the track record for this dude says, as quickly as, you know, and with rightly so in certain cases, where you say that was unfair to give a guy a 1 year stint and fire him after 1 year and it doesn't make sense. Well, if you're Mark Davis and you want to just win, baby, like your dad did, and you realize no matter what you paid him, you're going to have to pay the price because you made the wrong call and this dude ain't it, you better move on, because the way Carr made his decision yesterday with the way he got emotional, you're either going to move on from Carr or you're going to move on from McDaniel. Because he basically called you out and said, you don't have any control of your locker room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't even imagine what, I mean, Devontae Adams after the game saying, yeah, Sunday's supposed to be the most fun day of the week and it's the least fun day of the week now. It's like, wow, that's a, it's not like it's amazing in Green Bay, but Devontae
I was
going to
say, it wasn't so bad up in Titletown now, was it?
Devontae Adams wishing he was still in a Packers uniform.
I wishing he was there too.
I think both things can be true, though. Because if I'm a head coach, like a head coach candidate in the NFL, and let's just say that for some reason the Raiders and the Texans are in the market for an NFL head coach going into 2023, where would I feel like I had the best chance to win quickly, to be a playoff team quickly? Because I'm still picking the Raiders over the Texans.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Raiders are bad because it seems like someone has mismanaged the team, yeah, not because they're lacking talent. The Texans are bad because they lack talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they have that's where coaching. You have to rely on both sides. You not only get the best talent when you're evaluating that, but you get the best talent not only with their coaching abilities, but also the way they lead, right? I mean, there's a reason why, and we didn't even have a chance to really talk about it, but Jeff Saturday, because he was in an NFL locker room as a leader for 14 years, he can lead people in a locker room the right direction. Now, you got to have the right coaching staff, too, to kind of guide you on a day-to-day basis. But obviously, Josh McDaniels doesn't have those skills. The same way we've said about Wade Phillips in the past and other guys, they might be just really good coordinators that just aren't ever suited to be a good head coach. McDaniels gets all the love because he rode the coattails of Belichick. Look at how many Daryl Morey disciples were the guys that were supposed to be the next guys to be like Daryl and just can't do it the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard to leave that Patriots organization and replicate things and turn things. I mean, there's very few people that leave and are highly successful, both in the front office side of things and in the coaching side of things. I think the most successful front office guy is John Robinson in Tennessee, and they haven't had less than 9 wins since he walked in as the general manager there. But he walked into a pretty decent situation. Yeah, the Raiders actually do scare me in the quest for the number one overall pick.
Me too.
That's how bad they have been.
Isn't that
scare
crazy?
Me in the quest for the number one overall pick.
You, what about Vrabel? Can you throw Vrabel into that conversation, or is it different because he didn't coach there?
Vrabel's an Urban Meyer guy, not a Belichick guy.
Yeah, I know that he didn't coach under the Patriots staff, but I'm curious because he played there so long. If you would give him being a Patriot label, and I mean, I think it's silly to think that he didn't have any sort of influence by Bill Belichick.
But he wasn't on a coaching staff.
Right, I understand that. And look, I'm not even saying that he's more Belichick than Urban.
But people forget, like, Joe Judge got a job because he was a freaking coordinator a special teams coordinator.
If you play for a dude for a decade, you're going to get influenced by that dude.
Mm-hmm. Like no question.
Sure.
But it, just because you're on the coaching staff and you go up, it's like the way that, you know, everybody wanted Bill Walsh's coaching tree, and then it was Holmgren and it was other guys. Certain trees grow and prosper with their branches, and others just fall off.
It's one of the biggest things in sports that people have to understand. Proximity to greatness does not create greatness. If that was the case, Auburn would hire Terry Saban to be the head coach at Auburn this offseason, and it would have Miss Terry versus Nick at the Iron Bowl every year. But proximity to greatness does not create greatness.
She'd probably be better than Harsin.
Belichick, it's not just the coaching staff, too. Look at how many guys behind Brady were supposed to be the next guy, and all he needed was to get out from behind Brady.
Sure.
And when they got it, they got the money, they got the opportunity, and then they all fell flat on their face.
One of the things whenever I look at a job that's open, whether it's a head coaching job, a manager job, a GM job, any job, like if you want to put this in like just to the business world as well, one thing that I want from a candidate is I want a candidate to be responsible for success. And I think you can relate this to the Patriots model and the Patriots way. If you look at the Patriots for the last two decades, what has been the reason for success? Belichick, Brady. So anybody under Belichick has had zero influence on their success. I think you can look at other assistants and head coaches and things like that around the league and find that, okay, that guy was very responsible for that success. I think the Colts are an example of this with Eberflus going to Chicago, and I think they've been better than what they, like with the talent that they have. And then also Sirianni going to Philadelphia. Look what they're doing. And now Frank Reich looked overmatched as a head coach.
Sean McVay.
So like those were two guys that were responsible for Indy's success, whereas the Patriot assistants have never been.
And Sean McVay is another coaching tree where it's all the spinoffs, too, when you talk about LaFleur and you talk about the guy in Minnesota,
Kevin O'Connell,
and you talk about all the guys under his coaching tree that real quickly appreciated, got it, absorbed it, and then went out and implemented it. And that's where you've got the key as a coach. You've got to be able to know how to implement it and take those things with you.
See, that might be counter to my point, actually, because if I'm looking at the Rams, the reason for their offensive success is McVay. Like, it's McVay more than it is O'Connell.
Oh, so you're
McVay.
Yeah,
so like that's kind of counter to my point, which is a good one, though.
I think this year we see that O'Connell was a bit more valuable than people intended to think he was.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
Because the same talent from year to year in Minnesota, but a different philosophy, and from a defensive coach to a really open-minded, forward-thinking offensive coach has made a massive difference.
Like if you were hiring somebody from ESPN 97.5 because of the success of the station, you would never hire me to be the, you know, kind of drill that point home. Cody, you said the Texans aren't that well coached, which I don't really disagree. I think Lovie Smith is a head coach, bottom third in the NFL, defensive coordinator, bottom third. Pep Hamilton is an offensive coordinator, bottom third, and that might even be nice. Like, I might be even saying that in a nice way, being bottom third and maybe not like the bottom.
It's generous.
Yeah, it might be a generous way to describe that. I also feel bad for them because I don't think that they've been, like, they've not been given the parts to have success. It is hard to say that Lovie Smith, with the talent he has on defense, should be better. It's hard to say that Pep Hamilton, with the talent he has on offense, should be better. What are some areas that you see of where they're poorly coached?
Well, I mean, yesterday is a great example of Lovie Smith failing to adapt to the modern NFL. There's not really, I'm looking at the schedule, there are very few teams that Lovie Smith's defense would match up better with from a man-to-man defense than the Giants. That's one of the worst wide receiver rooms in the entire NFL. And Lovie Smith decided, well, we're still going to keep that cover two. We're still going to stick with the zone stuff. And when Daniel Jones had to throw, he picked him apart. That was one of the easiest days of the office Daniel Jones has ever had. Yesterday, yeah, I know they got a little pass rush here or there. Jerry Hughes, another sack, woohoo! But to not man up those wide receivers and make it tough on them with the talent that he has at corner, this is basically a lost year for Derek Stingley. We have very little understanding of exactly what Derek Stingley is. That's why Jake and I got in such an argument last week. He's like, "Well, if you switch Stingley and Sauce, you know, what would it be?" I was like, "Well, Sauce wouldn't be Sauce if he was here.
No doubt,
they'd be having him sitting over there in zone." And maybe Stingley would be the same guy up in New York.
We were scared of that pre-draft. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
A lot of talk about the Texans. And then, Jim Crane. General manager Jim Crane is real fun. Does owner Jim Crane approve of general manager Jim Crane?
He's got deep.
He's a distant relative to Steinbrenner. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Brennan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.